Today, I have the opportunity to talk to Sal Mercogliano, and he gives us his perspective on the disruptions in the Red Sea. If you're not following this news story, I think that you should. It's really important that we are aware of what's happening to our fellow mariners around the world. And by understanding the disruptions in the Middle East and the Red Sea, we can become better global citizens and ensure that we bring the right amount of attention to the global supply chain and shipping. Welcome, everyone. You are listening to the Women Offshore Podcast. This is Ali Cedeno.
And Christine McMillan.
We are both experienced seafarers.
And at Women Offshore, we are making waves.
The Women Offshore Foundation propels Women Plus into meaningful careers through access to a worldwide community and professional development resources, while raising awareness amongst industry leaders and decision makers about issues affecting women on the water. This podcast is an integral part of our mission, and we appreciate you listening in.
New episodes of the Women Offshore Podcast are available every Tuesday. Subscribe on whatever platform you like to listen to podcasts on, and be in the know about the latest topics related to diversity, equity, and inclusion within the maritime and offshore industries.
Thanks for tuning in. We have another great episode for you today.
Hi, Sal, and welcome back to the Women Offshore Podcast. Thank you so much for being with me today.
Oh, thanks for having me back on. It's always I'm always happy to be on with you guys.
Yeah, and I know this is a very busy time of the season for you. You said as things happen in the global shipping community that everybody suddenly wakes up and then starts knocking on your door for an understanding of what's happening. So I did the same thing. I wanted to talk to you and get your perspective on what's happening in the Red Sea in the Middle East. And so can you give us a little bit of a background? And then I want to talk more about the human element of this interesting situation that we're in. So
sure. I'm happy to talk about it, Christine. So obviously what we've seen happen here is a series of attacks that have escalated since November. This all stems from the situation between Israel and Hamas in the Gaza Strip. Okay. So in middle of November, November 19th, you had a very dramatic attack on a ship, the Galaxy Leader, which was heading southbound in the Red Sea when a Houthi are a faction in a three-way civil war in Yemen, basically landed on the ship, seized the vessel, sailed it into their harbor, and have been holding that ship hostage ever since. Matter of fact, just the other day, they released a really bad music video based on the ship. It's really terrible. But they're holding the ship hostage. They have the crew being held. And then what we saw was a ramping up of attacks, missile drone attacks against ships sailing through the area. Initially, what the Houthi identified was to target ships connected to Israel, either through registry, ownership, the company. But their attacks just got wider in terms of the connection to Israel. And as you well know, shipping ownership and is very clouded, and always not easy to identify. And then the attacks became general. And that's when we saw the big diversions take place. Companies like Maersk and Hophag and then other companies all decided to start diverting. We saw an escalation in the war risk insurance in the area, which made it cost prohibitive. And so what we have right now, the situation is this: about 40% of the normal traffic that goes through this region, about, you know, normally on a good day through the Bab el-Mandab, you're about 60, 70 ships going through. So we're down 40% of that number. But in terms of tonnage, we're down 60%. So most of the world's container ships, product tankers, LNG, LPG tankers, they have been diverted around. What's going through the area right now is largely crude oil tankers, bulk tankers, fairly low-end value vessels.
Okay.
But fortunately, in the number of attacks we've had, we haven't seen any ships sunk. And most importantly, we haven't had any crews killed or wounded.
Okay, that's good news. So the attacks have been ramping up in severity, and it's gotten more dangerous where the insurance companies aren't willing to insure a ship to go through there, or they're making it cost prohibitive to do so. And so are the prices about even for a ship to transit all the way around Africa? And that adds basically from a 22-day trip to India to Europe, it becomes a 45-day trip. And so what does that mean?
Right. So what you're seeing here is the companies are doing the math. And what we're seeing here is, I mean, you can have a container ship. And these are, remember, the big container ships. These are the big ultra large container ships, the 20,000 box ships. Those vessels can be valued at a quarter to half $1 billion. And when you start talking about a 1% war risk insurance, you're talking about $2.5 million. And when you look at a Suez Canal transit costing about half $1 million, it is more cost effective to go around Africa where you're paying $1 million in fuel, but that's the negating the insurance cost. And that's the really big issue we're seeing is the cost effectiveness of the companies they're diverting around. And again, we've had some instances. There was a tanker, the Marlin Luanda naphtha-loaded tanker that got hit by a missile. Fortunately, the missile didn't explode, but it punctured the tank, actually ignited the fuel, but it didn't send shrapnel through the other tank. So we just lost the inert atmosphere in one tank, and you basically had a blowtorch coming out of there. The ship's the images and the pictures are just phenomenal. But that ship's crew, largely Indian, about 23 on board, were able, with the support of an Indian naval vessel, to get the fire out. And it's just a massive effort to get that fire under control. So, yeah, the ships are deciding to divert. So what we're seeing is the lower end vessels, lower cost vessels, still going through, and ships largely with Russian, Chinese cargo with no connection to Israel at all or the West. You know, you have the U.S. and the U.K. conducting military strikes in and around Yemen.
All right. So let's talk about the people that are on these ships now and what it means for them to be either going through that area, transiting into a high-risk area, or being diverted and spending twice as long on the ship that they were expecting to.
So I had a chance to talk to some crew members on some U.S. flagships that went through this region on January 9th. And the passage on January 9th was really the peak of the Houthi attacks. The U.S. Navy and the British Navy had set up basically picket destroyers. They're basically putting their warships between the main shipping channel and the coast of Yemen.
Okay.
And so these four U.S. flag vessels were ordered, basically directed to kind of come through the passage. And when they did, the ship's crew conveyed three key things to me. Number one, they said, holy cow, it was unbelievable. It was a 3-hour running fight where they were going through with missiles being launched by the destroyers, the Houthis sending in drones. The Houthis launched what we know to be a total of about 22 drones and missiles. So these ships were running through. Second, the crew said the Navy saved our butts without any reservation. They said without the Navy, we would have been hit. Several of the vessels were near missed by drones and missiles, but definitely the Navy provided them the key aspect. But the third part was an issue that I think is really important for the crews was on one part, the failure to communicate was there. Unfortunately, the ships were not given secure communications. So they were doing communication over VHF radios. And so that was open communications. And in one case, one of the Navy destroyers or Navy command tried to call one of the ships on a sat phone, but they called one of the three sat phones that wasn't being monitored. So they literally called the wrong number. And so the crews obviously had that frustration. And we actually saw it manifest recently in a House hearing where the unions are really requesting that if you're going to send our ships through, we need better communications.
Yeah.
And then the other issue that's going on, obviously, is an issue with the crews being compensated for going through the war risk. And that's really been up and down depending on the nationality, the companies. And I can talk more about that if you want to.
Yeah, let's dive into a little bit because we do have an international audience with our Women Offshore community. And so, you know, what does it mean for people of different nationalities? Are some people safe and some people aren't? What's that look like?
It's really interesting because if you would have asked me, okay, who's probably got the best arrangements? It's not, for example, the U.S. by any means. It's actually the international shippers under the ITF, IBF agreements that have the designation of war zone. So they're receiving the compensation. And let's be clear, what many of these mariners are after is not extra money. That's not what they're after. Yeah, they love getting the double pay. That's great. But what they're really concerned about is if something happens to them, if they get hurt, do they have insurance? Do they have the means to take care of their families back home? That's really the protection they want. They love medical insurance, but they like the life insurance too. So that, you know, again, if this is the end of their life, then their family is taken care of. And ironically, we saw that with a lot of the foreign mariners. We saw, for example, Danish companies with Maersk got the extra protection for their crews. But ironically, the U.S. crews were the ones that experienced the biggest problem because of the myriad of unions that sail on a lot of ships. Mm-hmm. What we saw is that some unions had agreements in place and others didn't. Okay. And I made a point of highlighting that in a video, and that got a phone call to me from one of the shipping companies saying that, you know, hey, hang on a second, time out, Sal. We have an agreement in place. I said, okay, so you have an agreement with all your personnel on the ships. And it's like, well, no, not all of them. But, you know, two of the unions have agreed and we're in the process of negotiating with the other two. And I said, that's great. But if I'm on a ship running under enemy fire, I'd really like to know that the agreement's in place if something happens to me. And yeah. Now we have the agreements. Ironically, once everyone decided not to go through there anymore, they have the agreements in place.
Of course, that spurred it along a little quicker, I'm sure. So you've talked to some of the mariners on the vessels. And so what's their mental health like? Are they stressed? Is it anxiety producing? Do they need to be talking to a therapist? Are they ready to get off the ship? What's it look like? What's their feelings?
So it's an interesting mix. You know, on some cases, for example, on the U.S. ships, a lot of them are holding in place, waiting for going through. And that creates a lot of uncertainty. You know, the worst mm-hmm. thing on being on a ship is waiting and not being fed information. It's the yes. absolute worst thing. It's you just don't know what you're going to be doing next. And so it creates a lot of uncertainty. And when you have uncertainty, that breeds problems, I would argue, in the mental state of the crews. You know, being diverted, at least you know you're being diverted. You can make plans for going around Africa and say, okay, I know I'm going to be on here for an extra 15, 20 days. That's yeah. that's pretty clear. But again, it's that communication that I think is really the key element. You know, I talk to the shipping lines, I talk to the mariners out there, and the shipping lines are very clear. You know, we're communicating, but at times it doesn't seem to disseminate down to the ships and down throughout the crews. And I think especially when you have an event like this that is causing such a huge, massive displacement, and it's going to impact reliefs down the road. It's going to, you know, change their ability, you know, because what little plans you can make as a mariner is dependent on getting off at a certain time. And now all of a sudden you're an extra 15 to 30 days and you've changed your voyage. That creates the ambiguity. And again, what surprises me most about this situation is that I would think that shipping lines, especially U.S. ones that work with the military as close as they do, would have the means and idea that, okay, this is what we're going to do in case a contingency happens. And it mm-hmm. really shocked me that that wasn't in place in many ways. There were no liaison officers being sent, that secure communications wasn't being sent. And then you have also some ships that are, you know, showing up on AIS, cutting holes in the Red Sea, and you can see them. You can just see them waiting there. And it's like, okay, this ship is going to go through. It's just going to be a matter of time. And then when they turn off their AIS, it's like, I wonder which way they went. When these other ships go dark, there didn't seem to be, you know, there seemed to be little coordination in the concern about the safety of the ships and crews. And to me, that's a very big problem, because if we're having that problem with the Houthi, then what happens if we're dealing with the Iranians, the Russians, or heaven forbid, the Chinese?
Yeah, we need to be prepared for bigger threats, right? And so I have lots of questions, but the first one I want to ask you is there anything that we can do to help support the mariners that are currently out there? Is there, or, you know, is there anything that we can do to make this situation better from here?
Well, you know, I was really interested to see that there were several hearings already being held on this by Congress. So the attention is out there. And you know, I would say that one of the interesting things that's happened since the global supply chain crisis is a lot more attention is being focused on shipping than ever before. I got to say, as long as I've been watching shipping, and it's been almost 30 years now, this is the most I've ever seen the attention drawn on this, which I think is a really good thing. I think it's a very positive thing. Now, it tends to be more on supply chain and the corporations and business side, but it's also an issue regarding mariners. So, for example, in this most recent House hearing, you had the president of SIU, the Seafarers International Union, that was there, which I thought was really important. You have one of the unions there representing Mariners. I would love to see a Mariner up there. I'd love to see someone up there who's talking about it. And that's why I think it's really important. However, I will say that the companies, you know, tend to shut down their Mariners. And I think that's the wrong strategy. I've said this time and time again, that one of the things that helps our industry and helps the Mariners out there is visibility. And yes. One of the things I try to do on my channel, I know you all try to do with Women Offshore, is to raise that visibility. So, for example, when I got called by a company and they wanted to yell at me for saying something that they thought was wrong, I said, you know what? I'm not perfect. I make mistakes. Why don't you all come on? You can say what you want. I'll air it. I won't even edit it. Whatever you want. You can make it a sales pitch. Nope, don't want to do that. We don't want to have anything to say about it. And I think that's such a negative thing. And that's why I think it's really important for Mariners working for companies to keep pushing the companies for that element to get that information out there. Because I do think that I am concerned that we're not looking at just the monetary compensation for these Mariners, but their mental well-being. You know, we need to be pushing more and more to get, you know, Starlink or whatever you need on a ship so they can have communications. A lot of these, you know, I get calls. I can't tell you the number of calls I get, Christine, from parents and loved ones of Mariners asking me, hey, can you tell me what's going on out there? Because I'm not getting any information from the company.
Right.
And, you know, I provide them, you know, just what little I know in context. And you know, that to me is a problem. You know, when Navy ships go out to sea, they have a whole support system for the crew and everybody, the ombudsman system, you know, really to kind of network people together. We don't tend to have that on the commercial side at all.
Right.
And for a lot of family members, they're just sitting out there and maybe they figure out AIS and they can see where their ship is, but they get very little information.
Right. The small little triangle on a screen doesn't tell you a whole lot of information when you're a caring mother or a father that's trying to figure out where your son or daughter is and how they're doing.
No, especially in a dangerous situation like we've seen, and especially when you have the images come out of these attacks and ships on fire, and obviously you start raising that level of concern. And again, you know, let's not forget that some of these crews are doing absolute yeoman work. We're seeing the displacement of food aid going into East Africa. We have U.S. ships that are delivering military cargo that's important for national defense. And you have the normal commerce that's going on. You know, once again, we're asking merchant mariners, regardless of sex or nationality, you know, all of them are the same out there to do a job that now has become more dangerous than it already was. We saw it during COVID, and now we're seeing it again. And lots of times we're asking them to take more upon their shoulders than normally you would ask them to do. And I don't think it's a lot to ask companies to ensure the families, to give them that little bit of extra protection that, hey, if something happens to me, there'll be a life insurance or a health insurance policy there for them. And to let them know, hey, ship's being diverted. It's safe. It's in a holding. I can't tell you where it is, but you know, or they're going to make the passage and they have the protection of the Navy with them. I think that's the least we can do, because the companies will let the cargo owners know that their cargo is safe. But again, we don't tend to do it so much with the Mariners.
Right. We need to care for the humans on board just as much as the cargo, if not more. So I think that this has been quite eye-opening. And I just watched your YouTube video on your own YouTube channel that talks about this disruption in the Red Sea. And so can you tell our audience where they can go find more information about this? Because you're following this pretty much on an hourly basis and tracking, and you have great data. And so we just barely scratched the surface of this right now, but tell us where they can get more information at.
Sure. So, I mean, you can follow me on Twitter at McCoglanOS. You can go to my YouTube channel, What's Going On with Shipping. Unfortunately, there's not a lot of great sources out there that are providing that information to follow it. Obviously, I follow organizations like Marine Traffic, the United Kingdom's Maritime Trade Office, which looks at ship attacks out in the region. U.S. Central Command does a lot of press releases that talk about the attacks out there. But most importantly, I would say, is follow a lot of the big maritime news organizations. I follow G Captain. There's a few other ones to follow that will give you the information that's going on there all the time. And it's a very changing situation. We're looking at this continuing for potentially months going on, because the root of the issue again is Israeli Palestinian issue. And we just had Prime Minister Netanyahu come out and say he's not going to accept a ceasefire. And so we could see these displacement and dispersions going on for quite a long time. And unfortunately, there's still ships going through the Red Sea. Let's not forget about this. While many ships have diverted, 60% of the trade is still going through the Red Sea. So we're still seeing attacks take place. We're still seeing ships hit. And I've said this before, and I'll keep saying it. It's only a matter of time till a ship gets hit that we have a mariner hurt and potentially killed. Right. The odds are against them on this scenario.
Okay. So that is, your YouTube channel is What's Going On With Shipping. I highly recommend it for anyone who's wanting more information about this and just everything what's going on with shipping. Because like you said, you get busy. Your busy season is when there's something big that happens or a ship is in the news, in the mainstream media, then everyone turns to you for answers. So, Sal, thank you so much for your time. Thank you for supporting the women offshore community and always being a great resource for us. We really appreciate you.
Oh, thanks so much for having me on, Christine. And I love everything that Women Offshore does.
Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to the Women Offshore podcast.
Come back next Tuesday for another new episode.
If you want to propel women offshore forward, visit womenoffshore.shop. Make a donation or purchase some swag.
Until next time,
stay safe out there, and we will talk to you soon.